Welcome to the Thomistic Institute podcast. Our mission is to promote the Catholic intellectual tradition in the university, the church, and the wider public square. The lectures on this podcast are organized by university students at Thomistic Institute chapters around the world. To learn more and to attend these events, visit us at ThomisticInstitute.org.
So today I want to talk to you about what I'm going to call the American proposition. Now in America we have freedom of religion, but in a way we do have a shared creed, at least a widely held creed, and that is expressed most eloquently in the Declaration of Independence. So I'm sure many of you, if not all of you, know the words by heart. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I'm sure you've heard these words 100 times. What I want to do today is look at that proposition and not even look at the whole thing. We don't have time to go over the whole thing. I want to focus like a laser beam on just one part of it. All men are created equal, endowed with their creator with inalienable rights. All men. What does that phrase mean? And among scholars, there's basically a dispute. There's a disagreement about what that phrase, all men, means. And so on the one hand, there are some people, like John Meacham, who said in his book, Thomas Jefferson, The Art of Power, that Thomas Jefferson, quote, basically meant all white men, especially propertied ones. And in his book, America Declares Independence, the famous Harvard Law professor, Alan Dershowitz, endorses this exclusive interpretation. So I'll refer to the exclusive interpretation of all men and the inclusive interpretation. So what's the difference? Did anyone here know Latin? A little bit? Okay, so in Latin, there's two different words that you could translate in English as men or man. There's vires and homines. And in Latin, it's very clear that vires means adult male human beings. But homines, that word in Latin, just means all human beings. So when I refer to the inclusive interpretation of the Declaration of Independence, what I mean is the view that would say all men means actually all human beings, all members of our species. On the other hand, Professor Dershowitz and others holds that all men in the Declaration means all adult male human beings. So see the difference, and I'll call that the exclusive interpretation. So here's what Dershowitz says. If the equality of all men had any relevance for their rights, as Jefferson suggested they did, then these words could only have included white, Protestant, land-owning males, since blacks, non-Protestants, non-landowners, and women were denied some of the most basic rights we take for granted today. Some or all could not vote, serve on juries, hold public office, appear as witnesses, make contracts, or live freely. So on this view, the exclusive interpretation, the Declaration does not cover all human beings. Indeed, it only covers a small fraction of human beings. Now, Dershowitz is obviously right that at the time of the founding, non-white, non-Protestant human beings were excluded from lots of legal rights. There's no doubt about that historically. But my question is about the proper interpretation of the Declaration. Is that what the founders meant? Is that what Jefferson meant? So in order to assess this question, I want to look at a number of multiple lines of evidence. So first, I want to look at other declarations that were promulgated around 1776, either shortly before or shortly after. Secondly, I want to consider the first draft of the Declaration of Independence. As you probably know, Jefferson wrote the first draft, and then it went to a small committee, and in that small committee was changed, and then it went to the Congress, and then it was approved with other changes. But Jefferson wrote the first draft. So I want to look at the first draft to see, at least in Jefferson's mind, what did he have in mind. I also want to look at Southern constitutions that were adopted after the Declaration. So I'm looking at state constitutions, and you'll see in it important contrast between these state constitutions and the Declaration. I'll look a little bit at critics and defenders of slavery, at Jefferson Davis, the vice president of the Confederate States, his view, and also at the great advocate for the Union, Abraham Lincoln's view. And then finally, I'll consider a little bit about Native Americans in the Declaration and women in the Declaration. So let's start off with other documents that were promulgated around the time of the American founding. As Thomas J. West points out, quote, men in this document, as in all leading statements of principle in the founding era, refers to all human beings, not just males. One can see this in other pronouncements of Congress from the same time period, in which parallel phrases were used, such as humanity, mankind, inhabitants. For example, Congress's 1774 Declaration and Resolves states that, quote, the inhabitants, that is not just males, of the English colonies in North America, by the immutable laws of nature, have the following rights: life, liberty, and property. In her book, Our Declaration, A Reading of the Declaration of Independence, Danielle Allen argues that men does not refer simply to white male property owners. She notes that the original draft written by Jefferson contains a paragraph about the violation of the natural rights of slaves. The first draft reads that King George, quote, has waged cruel war against human nature itself, violating its most sacred rights of life and liberty in the persons of a distant people who never offended him, captivating and carrying them into slavery in another hemisphere, and to incur miserable death in their transportation thereto. So, Allen notes that Jefferson talks about the markets where men, which Jefferson capitalizes, are bought and sold. In other words, Thomas Jefferson is calling the slaves men. And when he does this, he can't mean males only, because those markets were for men, women, and children. So when in the second sentence, Jefferson writes that all men are created equal, he must mean all people of whatever their color, sex, age, or status. The Declaration, in other words, is inclusive rather than exclusive in scope. Let's consider another bit of evidence, and that are the Southern state constitutions passed shortly after the Declaration. The state constitutions of six Southern states written after the Declaration provide more evidence for the inclusive interpretation. Now, aware of the contradiction between the American proposition and slavery, Carl Becker notes, quote, in the constitutions of Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Kentucky, Mississippi, and Texas, the phrase all men, when they form a social compact or equal, was changed to read all free men, when they form a social compact or equal. In other words, they were aware if you just said all men, that would include blacks, and they didn't want that, so they made it free men. They would include slaves, rather. We see this also with both critics and defenders of slavery, both at the time of the founding, reading the Declaration as being inclusive. So in 1776, the former governor of Massachusetts and royalist Thomas Hutchinson critiqued the consistency of those signing the Declaration in his letter to a noble lord. So this is someone who was at the time of the American founding who thought that we should not break away from England, right? He was a royalist. So he's pointing out in this letter how people who signed the Declaration were being inconsistent. So here's what he said. Ask the delegates of Maryland, Virginia, and the Carolinas how their constituents justify the depriving of more than 100,000 Africans of their rights to liberty and the pursuit of happiness in some degree to their lives if these rights are so absolutely unalienable. So in other words, he's saying, hey, you people, you signed this Declaration of Independence, but your own practice contradicts it. In other words, he has an inclusive understanding of the Declaration. Defenders of slavery in the generation after the founders also rejected the Declaration, precisely because they understood it to assert the equality of all human beings. Daniel Allen astutely points out that many defenders of slavery understood the Declaration's proclamation that all men are created equal to apply to blacks, and many of these slave owners therefore rejected the Declaration. For example, in 1826, Thomas Jefferson's cousin and spokesman in the House of Representatives, a Virginian slave owner, John Randolph, defended slavery by calling human equality, quote, a falsehood, a most pernicious falsehood, even though I find it in the Declaration of Independence. In 1837, South Carolina Senator John C. Calhoun asserted that slavery was a positive good and explicitly rejected, quote, the false and dangerous notion that all men are created equal. So you have, in other words, defenders of slavery who reject the Declaration precisely because they view it as inclusive rather than exclusive. On the other hand, critics of slavery had the same view. So think of Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln said, there has never been a man, so far as I knew or believed, in the whole world who has said that the Declaration of Independence did not include Negroes in the term all men. I reassert it today. So in other words, Lincoln's saying, look, the Declaration is inclusive, not exclusive. Lincoln continues. He says, the Declaration applies to, quote, the whole great human family. In their enlightened belief, nothing stamped with the divine image and likeness was sent into the world to be trodden on and degraded and imbruted by its fellows. They, that is the founders, grasped not only the whole human race of man then living, but reached forward and seized upon the furthest posterity. They erected a beacon to guide their children and their children's children, and the countless myriads who would inhabit the earth in other ages. Wise statesmen as they were, they knew the tendency of posterity to breed tyrants, and so they established these great self-evident truths, that when in the distant future some man, some faction, some interest should shed up the doctrine that none but rich men or none but white men were entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, their posterity might look again to the Declaration of Independence and take courage to renew the battle which their fathers began. So in other words, Lincoln's saying, look, the founders wisely included all men, meaning all human beings, in the Declaration, not just white men, not just propertied men, etc. So you might agree, okay, fine, maybe blacks were meant to be included in the original scope of the Declaration, but what about Native American peoples, right? Were they also included in the original scope of the Declaration? Or was it just white human beings and black human beings and not Native American human beings? Well, I think we can find an answer to this question by turning again to Thomas Jefferson. And Jefferson's thoughts on this matter were expressed in another work of his called Notes on the State of Virginia. This is from 1785. And in this work, Jefferson argued that what he called aborigines, he means native peoples, exhibit eloquence in political deliberation, courage in battle, break-hearted at family loss, and strong, faithful friendships. And he thinks that given similar cultivation to white people, we shall probably find that Native Americans are, quote, formed in mind as well as in body on the same module of the Homo sapiens europaeus. Later, in his second inaugural address, President Jefferson explicitly affirmed that Native Americans are, quote, endowed with the faculties and rights of men, unquote, and so are within the ambit of the American proposition. He recognized Native Americans as persons. Now, of course, you might say, well, what about his actions? And I think there's a contradiction here in Jefferson's life. He says that he affirms the dignity, the basic rights of Native peoples, but also in various times in some letters, he talks about extermination of the Indians if they don't comply with the demands of whites. So just as Jefferson had a kind of contradiction between his theory of all men are created equal, all people are created equal, and his holding of slaves, so too when it came to Native peoples, I think he had a similar contradiction between his rhetoric and the reality of his actions. So you might think, okay, fine, maybe black men are also included in the Declaration, maybe Native American men are included in the Declaration, but maybe it's just men, males, not females. But I think that also is a mistaken reading of the Declaration. I think the Declaration is, from its very beginning, meant to include not just males, vires in Latin, but females also, homines, all human beings, male and female alike. Now, why do I think that? Well, I think Jefferson thought that. That's the argument I'm making. In consideration of Native American culture in Virginia, Jefferson wrote this about his view of the role of women in this culture. He said, quote, the women are submitted to unjust drudgery. This, I believe, is the case with every barbarous people. With such, force is law. The stronger sex, therefore, imposes on the weaker. It's civilization alone which replaces women in the enjoyment of their natural equality. So in other words, what Jefferson is claiming is that women enjoy a natural equality with men. That can be recognized or not recognized, but it is based in their nature. So in Jefferson's view, if women have the natural equality of all who are created equal, then women also have the inalienable rights of the Declaration, whether or not these rights are reflected in law. Now, Jefferson, like the other founders, was greatly influenced by John Locke. Indeed, many scholars think that Locke, more than any other thinker, formed the basis for the arguments found in the Declaration. Like the founders, Locke knew the text of Genesis quite well, the famous text that says, God said, "Let us make human beings in our image, after our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, the tame animals, all the wild animals, and all the creatures that crawl on the earth. God created humankind in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them." So Locke, in his First Treatise on Government, turns to this text and gives an interpretation. And he says that this supports the idea that all members of the human species, male and female alike, are made in God's image and therefore given jurisdiction over the earth. So both scripture and reason, says Locke, point to the same conclusion. All individuals of the human species are made in God's image and therefore have a rational nature and therefore also have inalienable rights. Now, in a way, the situation of Jefferson and the founders is similar to our own with respect to non-citizens. So, in the United States, people who are not citizens are not allowed to vote. They're not allowed to hold public office, or at least the presidency. But to murder a non-citizen is still murder, even though they don't enjoy all the legal rights that we do as U.S. citizens. So, let me conclude. The effort to bring about greater inclusivity, legal inclusivity, for women, children, and people of color in terms of civil rights, claim the Declaration not as an obstacle, but rather as a lodestar. In his June 26, 1857 speech, responding to the Dred Scott decision, Lincoln said that those who signed the Declaration, quote, "they meant to set up a standard maxim for a free society, which should be familiar to all, revered by all, constantly looked to, constantly labored for, and even though never perfectly attained, constantly approximated, and therefore constantly spreading and deepening its influence and augmenting the happiness and value of life to all people of all colors everywhere." The Declaration originally vindicated the rights of the people in the United States against George III in 1776. But Lincoln was surely right that the Declaration is not merely a backward-looking document listing past grievances against a king, but also a forward-looking document presenting a vision of those of the American people of who they ought to be in their individual actions and in their collective laws. So, in summary, the Declaration, I'm arguing, is an inclusive argument. I don't know if these are people that disagree with my argument or just wandering in here. Not protesters, I hope. Anyway, so in summary, the Declaration of Independence is, in my view, an inclusive argument which defends the inalienable rights of all human beings. Other declarations of its time make clear that men is used in its inclusive sense, as in Latin you'd say homines, for all human beings. That Jefferson in his draft indicated that men were sold as slaves, so these slaves were black, and Jefferson thought, therefore, that these black individuals were men. The Southern constitutions adopted after the Declaration copied Jefferson's language, but changed it to free men, which would have been unnecessary if men were already understood at the time as excluding slaves. Both defenders of slavery and critics of slavery agreed that the Declaration was holding that all men are created equal, and therefore slaveholders, many of them, rejected the Declaration of Independence. The Confederacy and also President Lincoln both agreed on that the Declaration originally had an inclusive interpretation, not an exclusive interpretation. And then finally, when we look at both Native Americans and also at women, we see Jefferson putting forward a view that would lead to the conclusion that Native Americans and women also were included with the gamut of having basic rights and dignity. So that's my view of the all men part of the American proposition. If you want to talk about the rest of the American proposition, I'd be happy to entertain questions about that. But I wanted to focus especially on this one term in that American proposition, all men, and try to make the case to you that it is best understood not the way Alan Dershowitz understands it, not the way John Meacham understands it, not in an exclusive sense to refer only to white Protestant landholding males, but rather in an inclusive sense to refer to all human beings. So thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to this lecture on the Thomistic Institute podcast. The generosity of people like you makes this podcast possible. If you enjoy these talks, please consider showing your support at www.thomisticinstitute.org/donate. Your donation of even a dollar helps us reach more college students and many others with the powerful truths of the faith, and it ensures that we can keep publishing top-notch lectures on this podcast. Thanks a lot.